morning, everybody. This is Juno Sullivan from Talking Early Years. I'm slightly stressed because getting this Zoom to work this morning proved to be quite problematic, but my guest, Stuart Lewis from Restless, has been anything less than restless. He's been very patient with me while we figure this out. And I know that actually you will all enjoy his conversation with me about why we need to have people over 50 not consigned to the dungeon, but actually appreciated for their experience and what they can bring to the workplace. Many of you will be working in the early years, know how absolutely nightmarish the recruitment and retention challenges are at the moment. It's no longer a crisis, it's just continuing on. And I just feel that it's not just us, care sector, hospitality, construct, you hear it everywhere now. So people like Stuart surely are to be commended for actually raising the bar and talking about people over 50 who are not who can do other things and who can change their careers and who can do many other contribute in very many ways to the world of employment. So we're going to start by asking Stuart to sort of talk about himself, well, not too much, but you know, why he sort of set up Restless and what motivated him to do that, and then we'll go from there. But good morning to you, Stuart, and apologies again for a kind of slightly sticky start to this, what I hope will be a very interesting conversation.
No, it's a real pleasure to be here, and thanks very much for having me. So shall I start with a bit of background as to why I why Restless exists? So the trigger point for me, I've been working in big corporate for most of my career, actually, in broad general management roles. I'd always wanted to have more of an impact, and I'd fallen in love with working in smaller companies where you can have a bigger impact. And I'd always wanted to have more of a social impact, if that makes sense. The trigger point for me actually was when my father passed away. It made me realize I wasn't getting any younger, as it so often does. But more pertinently for Restless, actually, it was reflecting that he'd been retired for longer than he'd been in the workplace. And that got me thinking around the whole longevity opportunity. People were living for longer, they were living healthier lives. Actually, how did and reflecting on conversations that I'd had with him around transitions into retirement and so on, how you often lose your social network, you lose your social status. And it was abundantly clear to me, the more research we did, is that this is an enormous life transition point for people. Like ONS data backs us up today, like our earnings peak in our 40s and they decline in our 50s as we transition into different areas of work, often for more rewarding career paths. I wish I'd known that in my 20s, I'd have saved more in my pension. And at the same time, there was a show on Channel 4 that I'm sure you're familiar with Old People's Home for 4-year-olds. And in my slightly emotional state, I found that really powerful. And for listeners on the call who aren't familiar with it, essentially they took 11 pensioners in their mid-80s in a care home, and they subjected them to the daily torment of 4-year-old children for 6 weeks. But they measured them for physical mobility, mental cognition, and depression, actually. And the results were so stark. At the end of the six-week period, no one measured for depression, and many had in the start. Mental cognition improved, physical mobility had improved. And that fed into this idea of building Restless as a platform that could help people stay active for as long as they wanted to. And the rest is history, shall we say.
There is an organization called, I think it's Ready Generations, but it's run by somebody called Sue Eggersdorf. And she and I talked about, you know, what we called intergenerational or multi-generational nurseries. So you could site them on next to homes for older people. And there was quite a lot of interesting stuff done in the US and in France, actually, on some of that. And she's actually done that now in Manchester. Oh, no, actually, in Liverpool. So she has actually done that in Liverpool very successfully. And I hope you know her. And if you don't, you really must meet her, because she's kind of translated your idea into reality, and to be commended, actually, Sue.
It's so powerful. You just need to look at the faces. Anyone who's got grandparents will see faces light up. But also with the kids, like both ends of the spectrum are just delighted. It's such a powerful, powerful element. We don't do that specifically ourselves, but we do try and help find candidates for a lot of enterprises such as yourself that works with younger children, if that makes sense.
And just tell us a bit about the sort of business model of Restless. Like, what actually do you do, and how do you sort of source people and encourage them to want to do something kind of maybe different or maybe a bit out of their comfort zone?
Yeah, so we started off very much as a working career, dedicated working career site, helping people navigate midlife career transitions, not necessarily at the senior exec level, because a lot of that would be placed through network and wouldn't be done through a website. But for everyday folks, helping them navigate midlife career transitions. And some of the things sound so simple. So if you think about a CV writing guide, it's enormously different, the advice you need for someone in their 50s who's got almost pages and pages of experience versus someone coming out of education and looking to boost up their experience on the CV. If you think about, when I think back to leaving education, I was also drilled in modern interview techniques. How do you answer competency-based interview questions? You're drilled coming out of academia. Again, for someone in their 50s or 60s, maybe they haven't had an interview for 10, 15 years, very, very competent, but not schooled or drilled in modern interview techniques. So how do you help people with that kind of, give them that kind of knowledge that other groups would have, if that makes sense, so that you try and level the playing field a little bit, all the way through to kind of support network on the community, learning opportunities on the learning marketplace and so on. And I think one of the big turning points for us actually was when COVID happened. So when COVID happened, we moved much more broadly from just work to touch many other transition points in midlife. So whether that was financial, with people kind of tip from accumulation to decumulation and pensions, whether it's relationship transitions, kids moving out of home, parents going into care. And the central theme of helping navigate transitions has remained, but we're quite broad now in how we help people through that. And actually one of the things that we've always remarked on from day one is how interlinked different aspects of people's lives are when they get to midlife. So in my 20s, I joke that if I drew a Venn diagram of my Facebook profile, it shows how old I am having a Facebook profile, versus my LinkedIn profile, never the two shall meet. At my age, the two are completely interlinked. My friends are my work colleagues, my health affects my work, my mental health affects my work, my financial situation affects what career paths I'm considering and so on. Everything is so intrinsically linked, actually, in a way that it's not in our younger years.
Yeah. And I mean, this, you raised a number of very significant factors here. And I think transition is a really powerful thing to kind of hook them all onto. I, like you, recently lost my dad, and it does actually provoke you into a different space you can't even anticipate when you suddenly realize that the generation above you has now gone and you're the next one along, and your time suddenly starts to tick. But the other thing that you talk about is, like, if you're introducing people who've been trained or who've been educated in a different way, in a different context, how do they get, you know, how do they step into this kind of modern way of thinking about things? So your example of competency interview is a very interesting one. But also, is there some research around some of that stuff? Because one of the joys I have when I have older staff, and I mean, some of my staff are in their 70s, and you might think, gosh, could people in their 70s work with children? Well, yes, they can, if you can make the hours work for them and they're not exhausted by the process. But the interesting thing for me, and again, to re-ask the question, is there research about the kind of emotional experience and the kind of wisdom that comes with age for most people? I'm sure there are people who don't get that, but I certainly notice it in the nurseries I have where the staff are older. That kind of warmth and emotional connection that seemed positive both for the staff and for the children. Is there something to sort of, is that my observation and perhaps my rose-tinted view of it, or is there actually research that supports that?
I couldn't point to a specific study, but anecdotally, everyone we talk to recognizes that things like empathy boost over age, things like communication skills, ability to deal with the unexpected, And it's no surprise if you think life experience, it breeds you the ability to deal with unexpected situations, and kids often like to put you in unexpected situations.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But empathy, I've become far more empathetic as I've aged, because I've been exposed to friends, colleagues, family, who've gone through good times and difficult times. I will never walk in everyone's shoes, but over my time, I've walked in more shoes than I had when I was younger, if that makes sense. So I've become more empathetic. And again, that's me, not everyone will be the same, but there is, anecdotally, we hear people saying similar things.
And have you got like examples or sort of case studies of you know, sort of people who you've kind of successfully placed in, particularly in early year settings?
Yeah, so the feedback we often get is extremely warm, actually. And what we, there's almost a pattern of some of the early years firms and employers that we work with, where their two main sources of candidates are either quite young individuals or they're older individuals. So there's a number of firms out there that would provide wraparound care, for example. And again, if you think for part-time work, I know it's very different from full-time nursery care, but that leans very well into a flexible workforce, which has historically been focused on students, but increasingly more so is now focused on older individuals in their 50s and 60s. Like one of the stats I always like to share is that 40% of the part-time workforce is over 50. And most people are shocked by that, because they think, again, if you think part-time workforce, you think students. Actually, that is shifting quite substantially, actually. But the stories of the individuals are very heartwarming, and the feedback you get from the families carers looking after the children is beautifully warm. Like, it really is heartwarming, if that makes sense. There's just such a bond that can be created, and I think that comes from the natural empathy that comes from many care workers in their 50s and 60s.
And so, do you have like some guidance for those of us who would happily employ older people to be teaching assistants or, depending on their qualifications, teachers, to support the work we do with the, you know, children, and particularly around the education element of it as well? So do you have like some top tips that you've learned that we should pay attention to? Everything from, I guess, how do you advertise, you know, to how do you respectfully kind of interview people, to then what helps to make sure that once they're attracted in, that they're retained?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, one of the things I'll always start with, if you think, is one third of the UK workforce is over 50. So what was once a niche audience, and what people think, oh, it's just niche, I don't really need to worry about midlife employers, it's one third of the population.
That down, Stuart, that's an extraordinary statistic.
Yeah, and because then the follow-up question is always, are you spending a third of your time in HR thinking about how you attract, retain and this audience? It's almost universally, the answer is no. And when you look at employment growth, actually employment growth has been broadly flat amongst younger populations, because there's been very little kind of population growth in younger demographics. All UK, future UK population growth is coming from people aging, so people over the age of 50. So 70% of the UK's employment growth over the last decade has come from people over 50. So it's where people should be focusing, because it's already big today. And if you think where the future growth is, with an aging UK population, it's no longer kind of a nice to have. It's an essential part of workforce planning. But then picking up onto some of the tips. So some of it's quite going through all of your touch points, and some of it's quite basic. So if you think about job ads, like, are you using the right language? One of the terms that I always pick on is when firms use the term tech savvy, because there's been research about this, and it turns off older candidates, and it doesn't attract younger candidates.
Really? It doesn't attract younger candidates either?
I don't think younger candidates think, because it's expected
so
as a hygiene
interesting.
Factor. Yeah, they don't think of themselves as being tech savvy. It's just how they are. Like, so, and again, if you want specific engineering skills, you need JavaScript skills, you need DevOps skills. Tech savvy is literally a word that's there to ward off older candidates. Well, that's how it's perceived to be, if that makes sense. And there's a few trigger terms like that will work people to help steer them around. But some of it, if you think about career sites, again, there's a lot of focus on diversity of imagery, for example, and so on. Yeah. Often that's the exclusion of age diversity, similar to anti-bias training. So if you think about all of the standard D&I initiatives that organizations will pursue, many anti-bias trainings don't include age. Like we almost talk about age as the last socially acceptable form of discrimination in the UK. And it is, like, sadly and tragically, it is still socially acceptable to make comments about someone based off their age that you wouldn't dream of hearing about a man or a woman, or about someone because of their ethnicity, if that makes sense.
I absolutely get it. As somebody who's in their 50s and beyond, I kind of recognize that there's a real ageist attitude to you. And I know there's a great little terrible, but also great funny thing going on at Netflix at the moment. And they've got Kim Cattrall in that, you know, as an older boss. And of course, there's a lot of kind of imagery and narrative around, you know, can she do it? Can she, you know, she's over 50 now, you know, can she hold it together? And there's such a lot of kind of acceptable ageist kind of remarks and behaviors. And you have to prove yourself 10 times more as you get older. And people talk about being old because you're 50. It's not old, you know, it's actually an old. And people in their 50s do amazing. The people in their 60s do incredible things. It's just this idea that you start dyeing your hair or something, and you're just put into a different box. You're absolutely right to talk about ageism. It drives me crazy. And you're also right to say that it's socially acceptable. And I'm always fussing about images on photographs and stuff to actually make sure that those people are on there and that it's a celebration, not a you know, hiding them in the corner type thing, you know, that they have nothing to offer.
Exactly right. One of the really curious things I find about ageism is we're bound in society, we're obsessed by this link with age and hierarchy. So if you think that most FTSE 100 CEOs will be in their 50s, 60s or 70s, the same for most senior politicians, we're great at respecting age when it's followed a linear career path to the top. But that's the very few of the few people. Where it really bites is middle management. So for the vast majority of us who won't make it to be a FTSE 100 CEO, the middle management is where age discrimination bites. And the most common form that people come up against is being told they're overqualified. So because maybe they're taking a lateral move, maybe they're taking a downstep in their career. What the hiring manager is typically concerned about is that they'll be difficult to manage because they'll have done a job like this before. They'll have done their job, or that they will become bored and leave really quickly. So there are retention risks. But rather than explore those on an individual basis, yes, some older workers will be difficult to manage, just like some younger workers are difficult to manage. Oh, yeah. But rather than explore those on a candidate by candidate basis, it's sad when we see people get lumped into that overqualified bracket and dismissed. Like, we'll let them run the country, but we won't let them run a department. It's just bonkers, right?
No, it's really interesting to hear you talk about that. And actually sort of makes my blood boil a bit when you think about it, because you know, when you get new CEOs into companies and they do the clean out, you know, and they, you know, it's always those people who go, and they're often just hitting 50 or maybe early 50s because they're too expensive. So they want to bring in younger people who are cheaper, as they call it, and then take away the very people who train those younger people up. So then when the younger people fail, there's like, it's you know, it's their problem. And I just think it's so short-sighted, so arrogant and so foolish. You know, it's just bad business.
Yeah. And there's research to show that intergenerational teams are happier. And the customer outcomes are better. So we're focusing on help. We as a business, we're focused on helping people and midlife navigators transitions, but actually we're massively pro intergenerational mixing and intergenerational kind of multi-generational teams, because there's research shows that they're happier. Like our youngest employee is in her early 20s and our eldest employee is in her late 60s. Very late 60s, and just the team atmosphere is fantastic. You see some really wonderful conversations. You see two-way mentoring. Both people learn from each other. We're massive advocates of it. It's fantastic.
Great. So, what's your sort of call to action then for us? Where do we find out more about people like you? How do we connect? You know, how do you have? You know, if you were to do some workshops with the sector, what, you know, where would, how would this pan out? Because I think a lot of my colleagues would find this very interesting, and hopefully are going to listen to this podcast, so it might be even more interesting. But I think we should have bigger conversations about this.
Yeah, definitely. So like at Restless, this is what we do. We love to help people in the space. And however, whatever the problem is, we can help them kind of think through it. We're also trying to lead and set up something that's called like an age inclusive alliance of senior HR folks to help share learnings, best practice, and kind of network together in the space. So again, if anyone is interested in that, please just drop us an email over at restless.co.uk. But yeah, the more people think about it, the more people actively, like any social change, the more that's discussed, the more it becomes normal to discuss it, the faster change will happen. Like, change is happening. Like, we see very different conversations now than we did even 12 months ago.
Really? Positive.
But as with all social change, it's too slow and so on. But it is starting to happen, which is encouraging. And I think most of that, they say necessity is the mother of invention, right? Candidly, the chronically tight labour market, the chronic recruitment challenges in many across the board has driven that, actually. I think it's driven that need for innovation to do something different. And actually people are waking up to the maths in the space around this is actually an enormous population of people we've just ignored. Like this presents an enormous opportunity. I think there's been a lot of talk about a rise in economic inactivity. Like there's about 3.5 million economically inactive 50 to 64 year olds. Like, 500,000 of them say they want to work. So just that would solve half the UK's vacancy problem overnight. Yeah. If we can get the conditions right and so on, and the skills and the training. Yeah.
There's a thing to remember, people. 500,000 people over 50 want to come to work and bring all their experience with them. So, and given that one third of the population is over 50, we are fairly foolish to ignore such a big population of people. So well done to you for setting up Restless. It's a great idea. I love it. And I'm hoping that we'll be working with you. And I like your offer of sort of age inclusive HR. And maybe that's something we could do. We could get the HR leads in the various early years businesses to come together, and maybe you could do a workshop with them. I'll stick this on a blog, obviously, and we'll put the link out, and we'll use the usual social media to make sure people connect. But really, I'm so glad we connected after all that Zoomeration. Tech savvy, interesting use of that language as well, I must say. I've never used it because I don't understand what we mean by tech or savvy. I'll definitely scan everything to make sure we're not using it anywhere in the organization. Putting the young off and putting the old off is a fairly detrimental statement. So I'm going to thank Stuart again for giving up his time, and I'm going to finish by wishing you all a very lovely day tomorrow as well, and then on to the weekend. And I will be back with another Talking Early Years podcast very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you like what you heard, please share it or check us out on our website, leaf.org.uk.